This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Great job right from the start. Right from the start of the game. It all started at the start of the week with practice. Two, three really good practices. That's game one for us. We're going to move on to the next one, but hell of a job. Complete team effort from block shots to saves and the offense. Hell of a job, Brandon. Great.
Sabres won by a lot on Saturday, but they started dash three today in the form of absentees from practice. Tuck, Zucker, and Reimer, as we welcome you in for a brand new week here on Sabres Live. So, man, it's just, it's always a battle, isn't it, Marty, to just, you know, keep the good times rolling. The good news is we'll obviously have an update here in short order post-practice on the status of those who were not at practice, but also just looking forward to tonight, or tomorrow, pardon me, as well as the Sabres try to get their sixth win in seven games.
Interesting enough, you know how I go on moneypuck.com once in a while to see like the expected goals and some of the advanced numbers and whatnot. Yeah. So there's a deserve to win o meter, right? There's like a meter that goes deserve to win.
The Rangers, isn't that Shayna? Doesn't she have the patent on that?
She may have, but in a different way. Anyway, according to moneypuck.com, the Rangers deserve to win that game 51.1% of the times if that game was played 1,000 times. Basically, like Shesterkin maybe did not have his best game. I felt like the Sabres really took advantage of the opportunities. Like they scored when the opportunities, especially early, presented themselves. But yeah, it was a tough night for Igor Shesterkin. And yeah, Sabres took advantage of it, just like they did on the first meeting of the year when they scored five on Shesterkin and he was pulled again.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, the analytics post these types of games they're unreadable and unimportant.
Yeah.
Because the game gets so lopsided. It was actually kind of hilarious. Like normally I wouldn't really even bother to dive in after an 8-2 win because what's the point? Like we just know how flat out good the Sabres were from the start, how poor Shesterkin was, and how the Sabres just, you know, kind of kept pushing, which you talked about in the second intermission. Like you liked where they were playing despite giving up a couple of goals in the second, and sure enough, it paid off and they broke the wrong play. Anyway, when I did look at it, it was hilarious because one of the talking points going in was Jordan Greenway. And he was basically like the only guy that was light years ahead of everybody else as far as shot attempts
and against, yes,
as far as being on the ice for them. So I thought, oh, well, that lines up. But it also reminded me of how poor the analytics were after the game you referenced, which was the first meeting of the year when they went in and rolled the Rangers 6-1. Like after that, it really didn't matter based on how the course of the game went. But yeah, it was there was an awful lot to like. And again, you kind of have to check it at the door, obviously. But I suppose it's almost more annoying now that they lost the Nashville game before the break.
Oh, so annoying.
They could be on a 6-game winning streak right now.
And at the end of the day, is that 2 points? Look, we never know. That 2 points could be huge, right? And whatever. But I like what Lindy Ruff said. It's game one. It's 28 games after the Four Nations face-off. So now they have 27 left. They won the first one. They won it in a convincing fashion against a team that they're chasing. Look, when you look at the standings right now, you're looking at the New York Rangers. They're 2 points back of Ottawa and four of Detroit. Ottawa's dealing with injuries. Could the Rangers be one of the wild card team? Yes, there's a very good chance that the Rangers would be or right there at the edge. So you want a four point game against the Rangers. You put yourself in a position. You're only 9 points back of the Rangers. Could you make that up? Can you make that 9 points and see what happens at the end of the day? It's a good start. And the building was buzzing, and it was fun, and I truly enjoyed, the first game back after the Four Nations face-off break.
Yeah, Rangers aside, I mean, Buffalo's 11 points back of the wild card. That's the most important thing to stress at this point in time. And currently, wild card two is Ottawa, who's lost 4 games in a row. Sabres have 2 games in hand and still play them twice. So take that for what it is. Obviously,
Ottawa's dealing with injuries as well.
Well, I was going to halt you when you said it about who did you just say it about? About injuries, somebody was dealing
about,
with
I said Boston.
Well, I was going to say just about everyone is. And until we get the update on the Sabres, you may lump them in the category after one game
maybe.
Of full health because they're missing 3 guys from practice today. So it's noteworthy. It's newsworthy when we talk about all these teams and who's missing. But at the end of the day, it's about who's playing. And maybe they capitalize tomorrow on the absence of Trevor Zegras, potentially, who's having a hearing with the NHL after a brutal unpenalized hit on Rasmussen of the Red Wings last night.
There was 4 sets of eyes because those type of hits could be called by the linesman. If it is a major penalty, linesman can go up to the referee and say, hey, this was a major penalty. That was hit to the head. That was interference. That was whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And Michael Rasmussen, that is Detroit now. They're dealing with an injury, right? I mean,
they already lost Kopp in the previous game.
Exactly. And they almost lost the game. The Detroit Red Wings were up on the Anaheim Ducks, gave up 2 goals with the goalie pulled.
Dude, they were up 3-0 after 5 minutes of the game.
I know, it wasn't a good start for the Anaheim Ducks, but still, like, you look at the battle of the Anaheim is battling. Anaheim is trying to say we're relevant, we're in the fight, right? But this was an awful, awful hit by Trevor Zegras, and I was surprised that the Department of Player Safety did not put out a social media post yesterday, Trevor Zegras is going to get a hearing. And they didn't do it first thing in the morning. It took until about like 10:30 today, this morning, to put it out. Okay, like they just wanted to make sure. But to me, that's probably a 3 or 4 game suspension. That's how bad it was.
Yeah, well, and not to defend anyone, but the league did have 24 games worth of dealing
with video
over
review.
The course of the weekend. So, yeah, I'm not sure, where the priorities were, but it doesn't really matter. Obviously, the news is Zegras. The Ducks rallied to get a point last night. They had another last-minute goal. So they're 7-1-1 in the last 9. They're trying to stay in that race. Obviously, Calgary got a win last night against San Jose.
Vancouver lost.
While Vancouver lost back-to-back games this weekend, scoring only 1 goal in each, which mirrored exactly what Colorado did, which is a tad surprising, but we'll see where it goes. The Avs are obviously in a much better position, so there's so much to digest from the weekend, but we must most importantly put it on where the Sabres are at here, and that is winners of 5 of 6, being led by and this just in, a scoring change, our favorite, especially on a Monday when you haven't played since Saturday, but anyway, for the second time this year, Rasmus Dahlin has a 4-point game, and he is now up to 12 points during a 6-game point streak. He was awarded an assist on the Tage Thompson goal in period number 3, so that gives him a 2-2 day, and obviously he has put himself in a pretty interesting spot since. So in December,
it's interesting because we've mentioned Dahlin and Byram together. Byram didn't get a point in the game, and Dahlin ends up with 4.
Right.
But they just complement each other so well right now in the way that they're playing.
So from the blowout game against the Islanders, December 23rd, Dahlin has 24 assists, which is most in the NHL. Mm-hmm. He has I think more impressively, Marty, he is ninth in points. He's ninth in NHL scoring since December 23rd. He's not, however, the top defenseman. That still belongs to Zach Werenski, who the longer this goes on, I am going to be so mad. You think I was mildly annoyed that Brock Faber didn't get the Calder last year? Like, if Werenski doesn't get the Norris this year, man, oh, man, oh, man. Like, that guy is something. Oh.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, Kale McCarr, we got his 400, was that 400 assists yesterday, the third fastest in the
He's been in that category forever. And I'm not taking away lifetime milestones. Like, it's just this season, game in, game out impact.
Werenski's been so good. And Columbus is such a good story. And I want them to, look, if it's not the Sabres, I want Columbus to just say we're going to get in just because of the sure will that this team has put together. Dean Evason as a coach coming in and really doing a fantastic job. And what they've had
John
to do.
John Waddell. Oh, my gosh.
John Waddell and his team. Absolutely. So I absolutely love what Columbus is trying to put together and the injuries they've had to deal with and still overcoming all of that. That's great. That's awesome. But we talk about Rasmus Dahlin and you talk about him, you know, his production and the point total and the assist total. For me, what's even more significant is what Lindy Ruff has said after the Nashville loss. That was the best game he had seen Rasmus Dahlin play. And then he follows it up with like, well, this could probably be the best game of the season for Rasmus Dahlin against the New York Rangers. And it was the puck control and taking over game. Like, that's what we want to see, is somebody that is taking over the game. When you look at the best defenseman in the history of the game, Dahlin could have only had one goal in this game or 1 point, one assist in this game. He would have still have taken over the game.
In the first period, which is where the Sabres won it. 100%. He was so dominant. And what does he have that was especially on display on Saturday that Werenski and Makar possess? Their speed.
Oh, the skating.
And I think that has been the thing that has been limited the most through this nagging, as Rasmus described to us on Saturday, the nagging injuries that have plagued him this year. It has taken away from those lightning bursts that we saw in the first period against the New York Rangers, in my opinion.
Now, and that's true. And obviously, when you have back spasm, Duffer, you would know about back issues, you know, from what you've had. But, like, it paralyzes your whole body. You can't seem to just have that jump, right? Because you're worried if it's going to jar you. So he had that for part of the year, misses some games, comes back on the 23rd, still has to be very careful.
Well, he came back two before, but yes.
But, you know, like, you still have to be careful. And then, for me, the one thing that maybe wasn't aware of is Lindy Ruff mentioned something about Dahlin finally being able to shoot the puck like he wants. And I'm like, oh, wait, was he dealing with something else? And obviously, yes, he had to been dealing with something else because he said, you know, you're dealing with a lot of small injuries and things that are holding you back. But the shot, you know, the shot that he scored the goal with at the Four Nations faceoff, the shot that he scored the goal in against Shesterkin, coming in, switching the, opening up the hips and letting that puck go against the grain. Like, that is not easy to do. That's a very highly skilled type of shot. And Dahlin now with the skating and the shooting, it's been fantastic.
Yeah, and honestly, I would say equally as impressive based on what it can mean moving forward was his first goal because of where he was. And you don't get there, i.e. the front of the net, as a defenseman, unless you are feeling so good about yourself. And if you watch Werenski specifically, and always Makar, but Werenski this year, the number of times he has led the attack from the defense or found himself on breakaways, it only happens when you're feeling like you can separate yourself. Like in this case, he's putting himself into the traffic, but knowing full well that he's feeling so good, he can get back and defend a play. And I love seeing that. My goodness.
The number one skill for an elite defenseman will always be skating. Even in previous generation of the game, going back to Bobby Orr, they're skating, right? And even, sure. You know, the Paul Coffey and the Ray Bourque and those guys, it's all about the skating. But skating allows you to produce offensively, but skating allows you to defend. Like, if you want to defend the best in the game, you have to be able to move. Right? Yeah. Let's take a look. Okay, Charlie McAvoy, when he hits Connor McDavid in the Four Nations faceoff in that game on Saturday night, the USA-Canada game, everybody talked about the hit, but Charlie McAvoy can only do that if he's confident and in his skating, knowing that he can stay up on him. And what we're seeing now, especially in that defense pair between Dahlin and Byram, is they're so confident in their skating that it's not just about the offense. It's in the way how they defend. Now, Dahlin saved a goal, right? UPL had a leaky one.
I think it's the fourth time this year. Three with the Sabres, one at Four Nations, that he's pulled one off the line. It's amazing.
And that's the recognition, but also the hockey IQ of realizing the body language of your goalie. He's squeezing it, and you're like, oh, he doesn't think he has it. I better stay around because that puck could come out anywhere, and he saved it behind. That was a big moment of the game. Like, you know, it's 5-2. That could have made it 5-3, and all of a sudden you're like, wow, 5-0 lead in the first period. It's 5-3, lots of hockey left. Could have been a different second half of the game.
I love what you just said there about defending and how it is, especially nowadays, so reliant upon speed, because I think that was a major reason why the Four Nations final was as low scoring as it was. Mm-hmm. It wasn't lacking for creativity from the game's stars. It's really hard to break through when people are defending at the speed at which they're defending, you know? I mean, that automatically leads you to be in better position when you're able to get there. So anyway, I thought it was super cool. I thought, I loved the pace of play from the Sabres early on to get where they got to. And obviously we led the show by talking about who wasn't at practice today. Lindy Ruff saying they're gonna have to wait till tomorrow's morning skate to get the final word on Zucker and Tuck. Obviously both had third period situations that left the crowd gasping a little bit. Zucker on a blocked shot, Tuck on a tumble into the boards. They are expected to game day skate tomorrow. James Reimer had a family issue and was given the day off. So Marty, like, you can't put the cart before the horse here. You can only talk about what happened here at practice today, and that was not having Tuck and Zucker, two of your top six forwards.
Well, you know, in the game where you got Jordan Greenway back and you're like, hey, we're finally getting back to healthy and the lines and we have depth and we can roll them. Now, unfortunately, you're dealing with Zucker and Tuck. Look, Lindy said after Saturday's game that he wasn't overly concerned about Alex Tuck. They had yesterday off, give him another day to kind of go through, you know, the treatments and see what it's like tomorrow. When the injury to Tuck happened in the game, I was actually up in the suite visiting Greg Manzi, the junior Sabres 16U player that had an unfortunate accident on the ice this year. Nothing dirty, but he has been dealing with you know, a spine injury and doing his rehab. So, you know, the Manzi family is from Syracuse. Tuck is from Syracuse. They were like, oh, they know Alex really well. After the game, Greg was in the locker room and Alex took pictures with the group and with the family. So I was like, okay, look, if you were dealing with a major injury, you probably wouldn't be out there. Like, you'd be doing treatment, maybe even in a brace or whatever. Alex was out there with a big smile with the family and Greg Manzi. So it was good to see. That was the first thing I thought when I saw those pictures is, okay, Lindy said not overly concerned, and that was a bad look because Tucky stayed down. But he's out there with a big smile after the game with other people. I'm encouraged by that. Maybe he misses tomorrow, but I don't know that this is going to be a week-to-week type of situation.
Yeah, and obviously Anaheim is tomorrow. They have six games before the trade deadline, which is, you know, worthy of talking about here. Plus, as I mentioned before, there's 24 games over the course of the weekend in the NHL. So prepare for rapid fire, Marty and myself, at the bottom of the hour, because we're going to try and touch on, I mean, there's so many things that are relevant and important, and you know, potentially impactful. As the Sabres try to progress here, well, who else is doing what? And man, oh man, obviously Ovechkin story, Capital story, Jet story, and on and on it goes. One thing that, I mean, people have been waiting for, the coach has been wanting, the players have talked about a million times is, man, we need to be better at home. The Sabres right now have the longest active home win streak in the NHL. It's a five-gamer going into the battle with the Ducks tomorrow.
Hey, they're 14-12-3 at home. They're plus two. Like, I mean, it's better than being on the other side, but hey, you were on the other side. You were on the minus side, and you're going forward.
Plus or minus, dis or dat, however you want to describe it. The Sabres have played the fewest games in the Eastern Conference. Is that a good thing or a bad thing based on where they are right now?
I'm going to say it's a good thing based on where they are right now, because you have games to be able to look ahead and say if we win those games, right? That, look, you're 4 points back of Pittsburgh, but you have four games in hand. You're 6 points back of Philly. You have three games in hand. You're six back of Montreal. You're two games in hand. Like, you could be a lot closer. And look, you got to win those games.
11 back of Ottawa, two in hand, head-to-head twice. So yeah. Honestly, if you're a glass half-full person, that's, what was that, 8 points right
that's
there?
That's 8 points, yeah. That's 8 points. And, yeah.
So imagine it in your head. That you're only three back of Ottawa. Honestly, like, why would you ever look at this negatively, right? You have to keep that hope.
I know that that's not
right.
I know that we're not looking at the Florida Panthers or whatnot, but they just, Paul Maurice said today, Matthew Tkachuk is going to be out long term. He will play again with the Florida Panthers this year, but he's going to be out long term. How does that affect the Florida Panthers who lost over the weekend? Like, it just, to me, there's still way too much to be played and way too many factors that are affecting other teams to say
just
this
to,
is...
Just for clarity on Tkachuk, the quote, I believe, is could be a bit longer term.
Yes, longer
so
term.
So I think sometimes... That may get you to the exact same spot. I just want to make sure that...
Yes.
Sometimes it's, we really jump the gun.
Let's just say it this way. I think it's a LTIR situation where he may not return for the regular season, but would be ready for game one of the playoffs. Let's just put it this way.
If there's one thing we're good at, it's splitting hairs and talking over one another. That I know. So,
yeah, but listen, that is that, you know, there was a lot of goals. Look, we mentioned Jordan Binnington, right? On Friday, like, could he be on the move? Whatnot. After this weekend and seeing the Oilers give up a gazillion amount of goals.
13 goals against in two losses.
It was not good. You're thinking, okay, well, now let's add Jordan Binnington to the conversation. Let's add John Gibson to the conversation, the goalie conversation, right? That
well, Gibson's
is what,
hurt, again, if you didn't know. He came out of the game on Saturday.
Yes.
Dostal had to come in. Dostal played Sunday. And the obviously no update from the Ducks yet today. And it was apparently, in the words of Greg Cronin, something that was like a persistent issue, something he's dealt with before, and that's why they took him out after two periods. But what that means for Anaheim moving forward, what that means for his potential trade value, it is a big, big, big question as we approach the March 7th trade deadline.
It's a huge risk. You have... Philip Grubauer in the minors now with the Seattle organization. You have Tristan Jarry in the minors with the Pittsburgh Penguins organization. You got guys that are making $4, $5, $6 million in the minors. And you have a goalie market that could change and flip on its head at any moment. I think that Gibson news is huge. And obviously Binnington is, I don't think anybody would talk about maybe him being on the move before the Four Nations so much, but now it's a big talking point.
Yeah, I mean, he has, interestingly, in his remaining years, including this one, he has modified no trade of 18 teams yes. this year, 14 the next, and 10 in the final year. So, yeah. You know, you lose a little bit of control, but he's also on a big high, and... They beat Colorado yesterday 3-1. Like, it was, you know, after losing the game before in dramatic, awful late game fashion, they had scored a power play goal to take the lead late, only to surrender one before the buzzer and then lose. Of course, in a shootout with Kyle Connor not chosen to play in the Four Nations final, but he's the deciding guy.
And our boy Eric Comrie getting the win.
Oh, I was just going to say that. Man, you're reading my mind. I was going to say, because you talked about him earlier this year and his lack of run support, it's so cool to see his goals against at under 2.6, his save percentage at 910, and his record now almost at 500. He's so deserving of this, and he's always had a comfort there with Winnipeg. It was a smart move, and I'm so happy for him going back.
He went into camp, and he won the job into camp, right? It was a three-goalie battle, and Kaapo Kähkönen was there, and he won it, and that was great for him. And, yeah, sometimes you have that comfort about where you are in familiar settings with a familiar like coaching staff or a goalie coach, and it worked great for Eric Comrie. So good for him. That's good. And it's, you know, the same with Kevin Lankinen. And we talked on Friday about his contract extension, a 5-year deal at $4.5 million in Vancouver. But this is a guy that didn't have a job in training camp. That was like, hey, okay, we'll bring you over because our main guy is hurt. He's been great and now is rewarded with a 5-year deal. Like, there's some good stories when it comes to goaltending like this around the NHL.
When Lankinen signed his deal, did you immediately look for a comparable?
I just thought in my head, that's a lot of money. I didn't look for a
it's
comparable,
actually
but
not,
I thought
though.
That was...
Like, it yeah. is circumstantially based on him not having a locked-in deal when September rolled around, right?
Yes.
But who was he teammates with very recently?
In Nashville?
You're going to have to decipher my question. Who was he teammates with very recently?
Oh, okay. So that is Finland with UPL.
Yes. And if you look, their stat line career-wise is almost identical in games played, wins, and the numbers. The only difference is 3 years of age, and now they are almost identical contractually. Yeah. So it was wild to me. It's like, these Finns, like,
I guess
amazing.
Looking at it this way, it was in the right sweet spot with the money at 4.5, right? That's what it is. But the difference is that one was drafted by an organization, climbed the ladder, and opened the door as a number one, and boom, I'm here, like UPL, where the other guy was like, almost an afterthought. Come, we have an injury situation. Oh, you're taking over. Good. Yeah. And now you're being rewarded.
Real quick before we break, and again, there's so much to get into here today as the Sabres get ready for the Ducks tomorrow. But we found out just before the show through social media, longtime NHL and Rangers broadcaster Al Troutwig passed away, 68 years of age. This is really sad and shocking. He was incredible at his craft. He was just such a pleasure to watch, to lead you into anything he did in the sports realm, and obviously mostly Rangers for our audience.
One of the first hosts I've worked with, Duffer, because when I retired with the Rangers, I started doing MSG Rangers broadcasts, and he was one of the first that I worked alongside. So I learned a lot from him. Our walks across 7th Avenue, like from MSG to the studio, were always great because he would give me little tips here and there. But more importantly, I know people are going to say, oh, the Rangers, Al Troutwig, the Knicks, Al Troutwig, like he did so much. For me, it was watching him or listening to him at the Olympics. He used to do cross-country skiing and biathlon, and he was awesome. And the movie Cool Running. He's in the movie. He's the Olympic announcer from the bobsled like event, like in the movie. And so he was such a professional and a master of his craft. And 68 years old is so young, and I was shocked when I saw the message on social media coming in, because he was a big part of New York sports for many years.
Take the time to indulge in the tributes that will be out there for Al Troutwig today. He was an absolute joy to watch and learn from. We're looking forward to the Sabres and Ducks tomorrow. It's Black History Month, and we'll have a Black History Celebration inside of KeyBank Center tomorrow night to unite our community, its people, by celebrating Black excellence throughout the Saberhood and beyond. And Sabres.com/tickets. I would encourage you to go to Sabres.com. Just to get an overview of many of the activations, the celebrations that will be featured tomorrow inside of KeyBank Center. So we look forward to seeing you then, and we'll be right back after this on Sabres Live.